Are you all afraid of? Let me just make a brief introduction. We're lucky to have here today Noam Shalal, who's from the Hebrew University in Israel. He's a faculty of professor in the Department of Geography there. And we're lucky to have him particularly because we were able to get a foundation grant to help pay his way, and he's generously conceded to both teach and participate in our research program here at the University of Pittsburgh. So it's a win-win, I hope, certainly for us, I hope for you as well. Just let me tell you a little bit about his background. Of course, he has a background in geography, studied at King's College in London, did a postdoc there. Has been in various places around the world in addition to working in the Department of Geography at Hebrew University. I notice a pattern here. I'm going to reveal it, or I think it is. He's collaborated in several international research projects. For example, visitors activities in Port Aventura theme park in Costa Dorada, Spain, tourist time-space activities in Hong Kong, time-space activities of cruise passengers in Palermo.
No.
He's led a large-scale tourism planning project in Tangshan Hot Springs Resort near Nanjing, China. So you've picked some interesting locations to do your work in. And I know since he's been here, he's already planned about half a dozen trips to various places, both in the U.S. and other parts of the world. So he's a guy who likes to travel and get around, and it's reflected in the work that he does as well. So welcome, and we're looking forward to hearing you talk.
Okay, so first of all, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to be here in Pittsburgh this year and at Oxford. And regarding the patterns, yes, I'm a geographer, and I'm also trying to cover myself when my dean is meeting me in all those places, and I'm doing research. So. Okay, so if you have any questions during the talk, please stop me. And I first want to, this is a kind of a review of things that I've done in the last 10 years, and gives you an idea of what we can do with tracking technologies today. And first I want to put it in context, and I think we should actually treat this all this development as a second geographical revolution, whereas the first one happened about 500 years ago, a little bit more than 500 years ago, when we had the age of the great discoveries. We had very few people that have very good geographical knowledge for that time. Of course, the maps was not so accurate, so Columbus ended up here and not in India. But if you had the maps, navigation tools coming from the Muslim world, you had a lot of value, and you could gain political and economical importance. And this is important. But today we have a more, I would say, democratic revolution of knowledge, where everybody can have on his tablet and smartphone Google Maps. You can get very easy access to remote sensing images coming from various sources. You know, just 20, 30 years ago, it was of low resolution. It was very expensive or very hard to get them. We have today, of course, a GPS in very widespread use. So we are in a, I don't think in the end, just in the middle of a huge revolution that gives professional people, gives academics, but gives also, I would say, laymen a lot of accessibility to geographic technologies that can really have some difference, of course, in our daily life, but we are now focusing on research. So I think this should be taken in account. If we are going back and looking at the methods we used in social sciences for getting time-space information about what people are doing, this is an interest of geographers, but not only of geographers. What we could do was either tracking or following or stalking those people, and I have a lot of evidence to those methods, okay? I have a colleague, he just invited me to Spain last week, to San Sebastian, and he had once a PhD student that was interested in the time-space behavior of young females walking in a park during the night. Now, if this is your research interest, it says something about yourself, but let's leave this aside. So in England they have, you know, this policeman, Bobby's, you know, with a nice black hat, and they just stopped him because she complained, you know, somebody's walking, stalking me, and he had to release him. He had to go and explain, you know, this is a PhD dissertation, etc.
Oh my God.
But yeah, we have studies using that. We have observation from high buildings, was popular in the 70s. Even now, today, we have the use of CCTV cameras. You can get some information, but it's a problem because you usually see objects moving, but you cannot really ask them questions, and you cannot link it to social any other data. What was used quite widely is time-space diaries. You ask people either to fill in real time, but it's of course a problem if you're visiting a city or you're doing all kinds of things to stop every 15 minutes and to record what you're doing. Or if you do it in retrospect, you have bias of, you don't remember well, you don't know where you were actually, and the resolution is not very high. So today we have three main families, I would say, of tracking technologies. The first family is the land-based tracking technologies. We have cell tower identification, RFID, Bluetooth, and different for short range, for long range. Usually it's quite problematic. We have it in the phone, but it's not very accurate, and usually you don't have access to that kind of data. We can talk about it. I made also some studies using them, but it's really, at this point, I just want you to know we have this opportunity. The second family is a GPS family. Now, it's a growing family. I don't know if you're aware, but anybody use GPS for anything? Okay. So now it's widespread, but I'm not sure that 5 years ago or 7 years ago you did use GPS. So it's quite a new thing. But you're using Navstar. You're not, basically, that's a name. This is an American system. But we have other GPS systems right now that you cannot use, okay? One is GLONASS, Beidou, and Galileo. Have you ever heard about them? No, because your representatives in Washington, D.C. are very smart, because before they give money to the military, they ask them to what would be the civilian users. So they made them, you know, GPS is a military system. The whole idea is to allow submarines to launch missiles into USSR or the Russian atomic nuclear missiles bases. Okay, that's the whole idea. This is why they spent all these billions of dollars from your tax money. So they asked them to add a civilian frequency. So you have two channels. One is military, one is civilian. So everybody can use GPS because it's free. But what happened, you know, if I want to attack Taiwan, and the Americans are just turning down the civilian GPS system, then I'm blind, you know, I don't see anything. So this is basically what the US is doing in different places, Iraq, Afghanistan, when they need, you can just turn down the GPS capabilities. So the Russians always had the GPS, it's called GLONASS, but they have only one military channel. You have very good friends of the US, the Chinese, they have their own new GPS system, just functional in the last 9 months. Okay. Currently it's only over Asia, so they're not interested militarily yet in this region. So it's only working in Asia, and the Europeans are also developing, the Japanese are developing, but it's not functional yet. So everybody that wants to be a key player in the world in terms of warfare needs a GPS system. So this is just to keep you happy that these military systems are being built by everybody. We are using the American system for now. And we have the third family, which is the newest kind of family, very happy family, very fast growing. we will call it the smartphones, okay, which actually link the abilities of the land-based tracking system and the GPS system together, and this is really giving us very good abilities. Now, just a word about the cellular revolution. In 83, Martin Cooper, he actually invented the cellular phone in 73. And as we know, this was like the biggest symbols of status in the early 80s, if you had such a phone. They came also, they were very cheap, of course, only about $4,000. Today, the ultimate symbol of status is not to own a smartphone. If you're a very important person, nobody can reach you. But a moment, today, mobile phones are widespread, and in many, this is not updated, this is just from 2010. I would say most of the world have, even in the less developed countries, have already mobile phones. It's much cheaper to have than land-based phones, and then nobody steals the copper lines in less developed countries. And this is important because, Eric, you like IP addresses, right? Mm-hmm. So basically every person have now a social security number, you have also an IP number. So we are like computers, we have IP numbers because here you have a smartphone, have an IP number and it's linked to you and to your credit card details usually. And when you have all this, we actually have the whole almost human race basically potentially tracked with their own devices, as the NSA, and they will tell you more about it, or ask Angela Merkel, and you know, they have some complaints about it. But what happened in February 2012 was really exciting here in the United States, because that year more than 50% of the phones out there were already smartphones. So anybody don't have a smartphone yet? Okay, don't worry. Very soon.
Those are the important people.
But don't worry. Try, you know, when you need a new phone, try not to get a smartphone next time. It will be a hard task, because this is what you will get today, because, you know, this is a basic thing. So soon, most of the people will have smartphones, but I'm sure if I'll ask the younger generation, you know, with teenagers, 20, 25, I'm not sure we'll find a lot of people without smartphones. So upgrade soon and help with the statistics. Anyway, smartphones are, as you know, everything but phones. Or you can use them to talk, but mainly, you know, you can do many, many things with them. There are cameras, browsers, TVs. But for our sake, it's very important to remember that they have tracking abilities. They have several ways of tracking with Wi-Fi, tracking with GPS. Google is scanning all the Wi-Fi hotspots in the world, and you can track your location via using the Wi-Fi, or the phone does it for you, okay? So this could be a very good tracking in urban, even if you don't have GPS tracking. If you're going in a shopping mall, you'll get very accurate about Wi-Fi tracking, and we have the mobile internet. So information could be sent from each place you are, you can get information, you can send information in real time. And this is a very important feature that we should take in mind. Now, I'm talking here, but you know, 3 or 4 years ago, it was impossible. Okay, it was just the beginnings. But today, you know, you get unlimited surfing or internet. This is part of the most basic cellular phones, I don't know how you call them.
Data plan.
I mean, so you're online all the time. So all the time, you can send data, you can receive data for any purpose, also for research purposes. And now we have starting also to have indoor tracking on a very high resolution of meters or feet. Okay, so you can if you want to have your from nursing. So you have communities of elderly people living, or hospitals, whatever, you can track inside in a very easy way with your own smartphones. I didn't use this application, but there are many of them coming out.
So basically, we can track everybody everywhere in a very high resolution. Now, in terms of the progress of tracking hardware, I hope you can see right here, this kit I used 10 years ago for a study. It's a very light, sexy kit, only about 2 pounds, not very heavy. And this is, we tracked here in a steam park in historic city. This is so big because this is what, by the way, was tablets developed for FedEx. You can put nails with them. It's very strong. You can throw them on people. But the thing is, the GPS was very small, okay? But it couldn't store any data. So you needed to send all the data via Bluetooth right here, and this is a phone. Later on, we have been using loggers, which can also have the data and also send it. And now we have smartphones. That's a huge advantage of smartphones, as I see, is that if I in a research giving somebody, you know, those devices, you need to remember to take it with them, you need to remember to charge it if it's long enough. Smartphones, I don't know many people that take smartphones and don't charge them. Usually you want them charged. Usually you take it with you. You have a phone, you want to go, so you know, my wife can tell me what to shop, what to do, where are you, when are you coming home, you know, to get instructions, I need my smartphone. So this is a big advantage, even if we're doing research, if somebody if we're using smartphones, there is an advantage here. Now, of course, with data that is coming, you know, locational data, we can do any analysis that we can do with any other data. As you can see, and I won't go over it, I'll just mention sequence alignment, that this is a method that I, in 2007, published. I didn't invent it, but I did the implementation for geographical analysis. And the idea is, I don't know if you're familiar with Hagerstrand time prisms, but this is a way to show, you know? You shouldn't abolish your geography department. Okay, so this is how you can represent time and space on one diagram. Torsten Hegerstrand, the Swedish geographer, introduced this in the 1970, translated to English. But structuration theory of Anthony Giddens, for example, is based on the time on Hegerstrand's work, for example. So it was quite widely accepted in the social sciences. And you can show here, for example of a young people's activity. This is a typical, and you can see this is like morning, this is evening, or this could be birth, this could be death, it doesn't matter. The scale could be different. And you can see where people are when they meet with other people. The problem is when you have a lot of people, have a lot of time space, this looks more like spaghetti bolognese or something like that. It's very hard to analyze it, because how do you analyze time space data without taking from the sequential element? And this is a challenge, and this is a neighbor of yours from not in Columbus, Ohio, but this is work by Mei Po Kwan. She's a geographer. This is when she was in Ohio State. This is representing, you know, this is how you would represent a different, you can see here, time-space aquarium of African American, Hispanics, and Asian American in a subsample. So this is a way you can show the data, but you need to do some aggregation, not just the descriptive. So what I did was using ClusterG, which is related to cluster X that comes from biochemistry, for analyzing sequences of amino acids. And the idea is that time-space activity of people is the same as amino acids. It's too early for heavy drinking, so how did the speaker come to this conclusion? What is important with amino acids or with DNA strings? I mean, we have 20 amino acids.
Sequence,
exactly. What comes before and after? So here, I prepared an example. This is Pittsburgh. This is Washington, D.C. Okay, right here. If I'm going to Pittsburgh, from Pittsburgh, all the way to, I'm driving, passing through, I don't know, all kinds of places on the way, and somebody do the same way, we don't have the same itinerary. We cannot be grouped to the same group. We have the opposite activity. But in the regular statistic, it will be grouped. In cluster analysis, it will be grouped together because we have the same activity. So sequence alignment can, you can see here a simple example, can group taking our activity and create two different groups. And this is a kind of a neat solution to the problem, and you get those trees, and then each of those groups have their different time-space activity. So this is just to give you an idea, and the GPS, the data that comes from GPS is perfect because it gives you very long tracks that have very high resolution in time and in space, and then you can start to actually, it's like DNA strings, okay? And then you can try to understand different groups of users. But with your permission, this is not the only presentation about that, but I'm just kind of showing the tools, the opportunities that we can do. So, of course, I needed to put the big data, the word big data, because this is a buzzword today, so any presentations need to have big data, doesn't matter if it fits or not. But seriously, you have, no, this is true, this is the manual I got from Anna when I was invited. She said you must put big data in the presentation. No, I'm joking, it's a joke. Okay, so we have a lot of data and we need to do something about that. So part of, I mean, the blessing of GPS, you have a lot of data, but what are you doing with that? This is, for example, a person from Israel that we tracked with the GPS for 28 days. So here is only his morning activities. So we know his home is here. Okay, so we have over 50,000 points, but what do we do with that? We can describe, or we can do. So we need to develop algorithms, or if somebody developed, we can already use them. But then what we need to do is to push the right button and to receive the results. And then we know that he's walking, this is kilometers, I'm sorry, this is about a little bit more than 3 miles on average every morning. The speed is about 4 miles. We know which day, at which time in the morning. I mean, I wish I was walking so, you know, so well. So you can easily get data, and now you can do the regular magic with the regular statistics once you get the data in this format and not in this format. Now we have also naturally more publication, and this is for a paper we wrote, so the database ended here, but for 3 months we got 11, so probably it would be right here. So we see much more publications in this field from year to year, and this is quite surprising because out of the 252 papers we found in peer-reviewed journals, you can see how many are in transportation, how many are in health-related studies. And this is really interesting. Geographers are not taking part in their, you know, the tools that are like the most classical for geographers. Geographers prefer not to use them. This is why we wrote this paper, and we called it "The Shoemaker's Son Always Goes Barefoot." And in fact, one of the subtitles was, you know, a geography without geographers, because geography is so cool, and especially those tools that people in other areas just adopt them and use it for their research, because space and location is very important for medicine, for health, for aging, for everything. And today we have really, really good tools and accurate tools to do it. And we were quite amazed, so this was kind of a wake-up call to the geography community. And I have to say that it was published in like January, February, and I was sure I'll get citations for this already, or any replies, or anything, nothing. But this is like this is important geographic journal. Just went kind of, okay, it's fine. Okay, so I want to share with you some of the things I was doing in the last decade. So as Rich said, yes, tourism is a very good field, okay? Because, you know, you can choose very nice places. So I started to track with theme parks. This was at the end of my previous sabbatical. We spent 1 month in Spain doing this research in a theme park. Historic cities tracking, I will show some examples in Hong Kong and Jerusalem as well, and on a national scale. I'm tracking now, in the last 4 years, in Israel, tourists from the moment they land in the international airport and from the moment they leave. So it's about 10 days of tracking of people. So this is give us a lot of information. This was published in 2010 by Routledge, Tourist Mobility and Advanced Tracking Technology. So a lot of the knowledge was appeared there. And at one point, some people, some good people, told me, you know, add the name of a disease and add a zero to your grant. And and you all know that better than me. I mean, I'm just a geographer. You are the people. So I collaborated with some colleagues from University of Heidelberg. I will show you some more results about that, because I know that there is some interest in these fields, with Professor Hans Werner Wahl from the psychology department. And the idea was to understand how does time-space activity change when we have a cognitive decline. Later on, as a hypochondriac, I wanted to team up with more doctors to be on the safe side. So we did some orthopedic research, including Alexander Vaccaro from the Rotman Institute in Philadelphia, giving patients before and after spine operations GPS and measuring the recovery. This was published in Spine, if anybody know this journal. Later on, you know, Israelis and army we like, so we teamed with the army, because there is a problem of stress factors in infantry units, where about 30% of all recruits are dropping during the basic training. Also in the United States, in Marine Corps, you have 30% needs to do it again. Okay, they cannot, because they have been walking too much, it's too heavy, the equipment. And they're always trying to get some understanding, but all the measures are not accurate. So we published this in Medical Medicine, and also in the area of neurology, with kids getting Botox shots to ease the spasms they have. So again, there's a discussion, are those shots effective, not effective? So we tried here. Just to say that this is not you know, my idea, or you know, there is a big, what they call the spatial turn, and this was published in Science last year by the director of the American Association of Geographers, Meiko Kwan. You can see here again, he's also a geographer from Santa Barbara, and the rest are doctors. A lot of money is given now out by the NIH to all those studies involving health and geography. This is not a new field, it's an old field. There are many journals dealing with that, but again, the high abilities of tracking gives new emphasis into those studies. And this is from their paper in Science, so if anybody's interested, you can get to take a look. And just to emphasize it today, you can connect any sensor almost that you really want into a smartphone. Okay, this is just some examples I took, you know, from Google. But you know, oxygen, sugar level, blood pressure, heart monitor, everything you can just imagine, you can find and connect to your smartphone. And it's also not very expensive. Okay, so it gives you today not only location, not only you can collect the socio-demographic data from the person. You can also collect all kinds of data about, you know, objective data about how the patient or person or participant, respondent are feeling at a specific moment in time and space. So this is really something that is quite exciting. There is not a lot published or done. There are some efforts in many places because this is a frontier now. But showing you some examples from the study we did with elderly people. On the German team we had gerontologists, environmental psychologists, geographers. On the Israeli side we had social workers dealing mainly with the caregivers. Gail was a dean of social work at the Hebrew University. Ruth Landau, from the ethics point of view, there is a question of ethical question in tracking in general, but if you track people with mild cognitive impairment or dementia, you know there is all kinds of issues about that, and psychogeriatrics from the Tel Aviv University. And the study was in the Tel Aviv metropolitan area, in the Rhine-Neckar, including Mannheim, Ludwigshafen, Heidelberg in Germany. Ludwigshafen and Heidelberg in Mannheim right here, and you can, if you're familiar with this area, you have you can get an idea. And again, the main idea was to see if there is a relation between cognitive decline and time-space behavior as part of many other questions, like what does it mean for the caregiver if he knows where the significant person is? Does it ease his stress or not? Because they had an ability to track the person at home with their own device or with their smartphone. They could only track the last 6 hours, but the question is, again, for privacy issues, but does it kind of ease some of the stress? Can it be a good measure or not? And what we did, a bit stupidly, I have to say, we did a very kind of sophisticated, because when you're applying for a lot of funding, you need to show that you're going to spend the money. So it was like a monstrous research design with tracking of a whole month, because the idea was, let's track them, you know, not only one day or one week. It was not very easy, I have to say, very hard to get the patients, and also the patient had to be, they had to be old, and they had to be either healthy or with mild cognitive impairment, but they couldn't have any other disease. Okay, so it's not very easy to find the elderly people that doesn't have any other things that will cause change in the behavior we wanted. So it was quite complicated, but the idea was to do a lot of medical examination, if they are relevant for the study, to collect a lot of information, sociodemographics, etc., and psychosocial assessment, and then do it at the end of the intervention, and then actually to repeat it for 3 years. So in total, we had a little bit from 250 people. As you can see, less people with dementia than we hoped for, but we couldn't draft people with dementia because of informed consent. So it could be only mild cognitive impairment. Then we hoped that they will deteriorate. This was our hope. They will do really bad. Okay, so anyway, I'm not getting into all the details because I have many, many things to show you, but just an idea of what you can do with such data. So first of all, regarding data collection, we use something that we didn't use in the other research because we didn't want this type of results, meaning giving a GPS to a demented person. Please take it with you anywhere you go. So if we do that, we can get to a conclusion that, you know, they just stayed home all day because they just forget to take it with them. So what we did was giving them an electronic bracelet. Usually they give it to people on bail here in the States, you know, but they put it on their feet, not on their hand. But this, so they could open it, but the moment they open it, we see that the strap is not closed, we don't feel the body temperature, and if the distance between the GPS unit and the watch was more than 30, I'm trying to translate, more than 30 feet, then outside of the home. In the home we have a repeater, but if they are outside, if they leave home and they don't, and the GPS is not sensing the watch on the hand, we know that they didn't take the GPS with them. So as a result, we could know what we are measuring. So we didn't, we shouldn't invent all kinds of theories based on bad data. So we knew how many days were, you know, 100% good with data all day and how many hours, etc. But what is important is days, not hours, because it's enough that I have, you know, if I have 23 good hours in a day and 1 hour that we didn't track the person, this could be the hour that he went out. So we actually use only good data. So you can see healthy people, and it's quite surprising that we did have good participation from the also people that started with cognitive decline. And here I just give you some examples of what you can get. So you can get, for example, this is a participant, this is Tel Aviv right here, and this is Jerusalem. So you can see in 3 years, in fact in 2 years, how is changing his spatial behavior, how it's been kind of diminished. And you can see in his case, his depression is getting higher along the years. Here he got help. Here we already have the help reduced, so this could maybe explain some part of the difference between this year and this year. So of course you have, it's not only tracking the people, tracking is just one extra thing that you do aside of all the other cognitive tests and, you know, background tests, etc. So this gives you an edge. And here, for example, Mannheim in Germany, you can see here, this is the city center of Mannheim. This is Luisenpark, if you've been to Mannheim. So you can see people healthy and people that start mild cognitive impairment. So you see the geography changes. You can see in Tel Aviv healthy people, but and the sample is very, very small, by the way, you can see right here. But you can see healthy, younger versus older. So you see, you know, there is like a line here. The people who were recruited in this area. So you can see how, as they get elderly, their activity space is shrinking. What people are doing, okay, on an individual basis. So you can see how they move through space, because we can know if it's walking, we can know if it's buses, we can know if it's a private car. We can know that already from the data. Okay, we know there's 61C and 61D, and we know the paths, we know the stops. We can identify if he's driving a car, if he's walking, etc. It's more tricky in the Netherlands or Denmark, where they have bicycles and everybody rides them. But thank God, here in the States, we like to drive big cars, big engines, don't have a lot of traffic, public transportation. This is very good for research. Oh, I forgot also in China, they used in the past to drive bicycles, now less and less. But of course, so we can get data about how much time they spend at home, when are they out, and again, you can use different parts of the subsample. You can get all kinds of information. Again, what is your research question? You will then do whatever you know. How many nodes are they visiting per day? Nodes we define as significant places, 15 minutes or more in one place, but don't forget we interviewed the participating people and their caregivers, or if they're healthy people, their spouse, understand where they go, for what purpose. So we try to identify those places. So you can see, for example, a relative decline of places they are going as the situation is getting worse. And you can see here, for example, males versus females, and it's of course it depends if they go to daycare or not. So it's very you can get walking speeds. Some people it might be interesting. How much are the, what is the distance? So you see the older group, in some sense, is doing better because they are. It takes time to get into those daycare facilities, and with the younger ones, they tend to get, at least in our study, to get less the treatment, or I would say the attention is not as good as the older ones. You can get driving distance and walking distance according to the days of the month, and you can try to do all kinds of analysis of those patterns. In those spider webs, this is home, okay? This is home, and this is a clock. So this is midnight, this is the noon, and this is the evening. So you can see what is the distance of this person according to the days of the week, and discover routines, repetitions. The center could be home, but it could be also the caregiver. You can give the caregiver a GPS, and you can give, and you can see what is the distance. Are they always together, or? So if they're always together, I would expect to see two dots here, or one dot. In the neurology study, we gave it, the mother was a center, and one sibling with CP, and one other healthy sibling. So you can measure, we wanted to measure independence of the CP, and to see how different it is from the other sibling. So you can change this, but in this case, it's home. Here we did something that I think is interesting, and we didn't publish this yet, but the impact of 1 year of aging. So we took all the participants, but we took also healthy, mild cognitive impairment, and people started with dementia. And it's the same people. All the people here, people that didn't change place of residence, that didn't become widow, or everything remains the same for those people. The only thing that was changed, it's the same months of the year. Okay, what's tracking? It's not winter and summer and all kinds of. And you can see, for example, here that you have. You see how space is shrinking, even for the healthy people. This is already aggregation of all the participants. MCI, of course. You can see, of course, which they have like two peaks, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, that they're going out. But you can see how space is shrinking in a very short period. In Germany, the results are basically the same, a bit different, but same, of shrinking activity space. It have a lot of importance, even for urban planning purposes. You know, where are people going to shop? Where are people going to get services if their activity space are shrinking? And people here had ownership, and I think this is the trends are, this is how much percent you lose in 1 year of your activity space. So the healthy are losing only 20%. I think it's quite a lot. And the people were about 72, something like that on average, those people. But you can see here in Israel, they lose in 1 year, people with dementia, they lose like 65% before they being locked in institutions. And then they don't have any activity space. But in Germany, it's quite interesting, and this is related to the services. The government in Germany, years they have. Okay, I won't make any joke about your health system. Okay, just keep the joke. Okay, I use it also for urban geography, but this is result of the German health system that is supporting people. So you see that actually when you already have dementia, they will take care of you, and so, and people will walk with you and will take you out, etc. So you see the situation of people with mild cognitive impairment is much worse than people with dementia in general. In Israel, this is like the natural kind of way when you don't treat the people right. In urban geography, this is something I'm doing right now. We didn't publish anything, but we just got a present from the master plan for transportation in Jerusalem. They tracked 8,000 households. So we got data, GPS data of 16,000 respondents, Palestinians, secular Jews, ultra-Orthodox Jews, and out of that we have good, we have 10,000 participants. It's 24 hours that they got interviewed, and we got the GPS data, and just to show you an example of the different between Palestinian women and men in Jerusalem. I won't get into all the geopolitics. This is basically the green line in Jerusalem is right here between east and west. So you can see how the women are more confined to their homes and to East Jerusalem, and not. It's a big study with some hot results about segregation, because for the first time we can have good data on segregation not only in nighttime, because usually most segregation studies is dealing about where people are sleeping, because you take census data and you analyze it. But here you can do segregation studies regarding where people are active. And because they reported what they're doing, we know we have the shopping, we have the studying, we have all this data. I have a very nice presentation, but we'll move on because I'm also looking at the watch. So we'll move to talk about some national tracking. So here I'll show you some findings from, and I should really, I have only until one, or when should I finish?
Well, some of us have to go at one, but you could...
One, okay, so I'll try to be a bit faster, but I'm already towards the end, so... So, tracking different segments, this is an interesting birthright, taking Jewish young people between 18 to 30 to Israel for a free 10-day visit. Also, University of Pittsburgh is sending, Hillel is sending them over. Sheldon Adelson, if you heard ever this name, from Macau and Las Vegas, is giving a lot of money for that. And we tracked 3,500 groups of those people, because we track anyway for security reasons. So you can get, for example, evangelists. You can see their day activities and night activities. This is basically not night. You should call it, where is the money going to? Because hotel, dinner, this is a day. So Megiddo or Armageddon, Nazareth, you know, nothing here. It's just a place for visit. So you can get a lot of cool findings. You can look at the different segments. You can look at birthright. In Israel, they start going up north, getting ideas about Israel, history, nature, religion, IDF, etc., because this is easy. North is not complicated. Then when the group are getting together, do some whitewater rafting, then they're ready to go to Jerusalem to get some good education about, you know, the Holocaust, Israel, politics, religion. Then they go to Jerusalem, and then they can go and see the other, you know, Bedouins, the desert, and then they'll end in Tel Aviv. So, again, I won't get into all this data, but this is... You identify anybody? Love? Well, no, this is... okay, this is Massimo. This is Sicily. Okay, if you've seen the Godfather 3, okay, if not, you can see the weekend. This is the final scene. In this it's the second biggest opera theater in Europe, so it's really nice. And we were tracking the cruise passengers, and you can get some pictures of how, you know, the one entry point, one exit point, very good. You have a team of people that is taking the data, and we wanted here. I'm showing you this because I got this idea. We did it this Easter. We wanted to see if incentives can change behavior. So because cruise ships are deadly, you know, for destinations. You have 3,000 people just going to one place. It's not very good. So here we have Piazza Marina with the biggest, with the biggest tree in Europe. Mm-hmm. And today it used to be an Inquisition jail. You see here some paintings of the prisoners. And today it's the provost of the University of Palermo sitting here, the Inquisition jail. I don't know if it's by accident, but anyway. So we gave them a €5 incentive, you know, voucher to go to two cafes right here and to visit for free this jail. And we wanted to know if it's effective or not. So from each ship, half of the people we tracked got the incentive and half didn't get. So you can see the maps right here. And you can already see there is a change. Okay, the money, how do you say, money runs? Money changes.
Talks.
Money talks. Money talks. Okay. So you can see it really helped to bring in more people. Okay? 100% more. or you know, from 21 to 43, but you can see amount of time. People that got incentives stayed there almost for half an hour, and those the people that came by their own will stayed for 5 minutes. So you can actually measure changes, advertisement. So it's I'm showing you all kinds of range of things you do. You can use it in different, GPS loggers have advantages, of course, very accurate, a high compliance rate from our experience, and we don't need to rely on spatial memory. But the problem is we need to find the tourist and we need to, or visitor or whoever it is, we need to give him the device and collect it. If we do the research in Switzerland, maybe we don't need to collect the very rich, they can just give them devices, but we need to get them back. This is why I like theme parks, because theme parks have one exit and one entrance. This is why I like cruise ships, etc. Okay? So, they don't work indoor GPS. It's an additional thing they need to carry, and you need to do additional questionnaires at the end or in the beginning. So, what we did, because we realized the smartphones are coming in, we developed as part of a European project that was dealing with designing safer cities, a generic application for location-aware surveys and report. And it's called Sensometer. And this is how the application looks like. It works for Android and iPhone. It's already functional, and you can, for privacy, you can stop being tracked, for example, you can earn points, and you can devise any type of question. It could be an open question, yes or no, slider, and you can edit. This is how you can also give incentives if people get points, etc. And you have a web interface, so you can design questions, and you can design which type of, if it will be yes or no, it could be in any language. And you can take pictures, they can take pictures and send, etc. But the nice thing is that you can create a polygon. This is the old city of Jerusalem, but you can create polygons of public parks, of public transportation, of shopping streets. And then when somebody is in a specific location, he will get a specific question you as a master of this survey created. So people will get questions regarding to the specific location where they are. And this is, we think it's quite good, because we did it, so we can't say we did a lousy application. Okay, you're a friend, so I can say it. No, but truly it's a good application. Of course, we develop it all the time. But it's the idea is that you can ask a question automatically. I mean, you don't ask a question. When the software will discover you in a specific place, you will get a question. Or they ask to send a report. But it can also be triggered according to the time of the day. So it's either location or time of the day. Maybe, you know, for elderly it's not a good tool because they don't have a lot of smartphones and they don't find it easy to use. But if you're doing a survey with teenagers or with younger or with students of university, etc., where everybody is also walking today, walking and using the smartphone, so for them, sharing in social media and answering questions and getting incentive, this is a normal thing. So I don't think it's maybe a good thing for elderly people. Maybe yes, if you put some sensor and it's very limited, but in general, I mean, this is a tool that gives us answers and information in real time. And I think this is an advantage, and people take the device with them. So just to show you, in our students' days, so we calculated the objective crowdness, and I didn't explain, but this means the percent color is percentage of people in all the things they showed you, and the height is the average time spent in this area. So you can see this is a stage, so naturally most of the people are right here, but this is what we could do in the GPS era as well. But here we ask people, do you feel crowded? So here you start to feel, you know, or you ask them about sense of security. So you can see, for example, where people feel safe or where people don't feel safe. Then if it's a research, you just, you know, report it. If it's for policy, you can change things. You can, if you're doing some of community develop issues, you see like a dangerous place, you can put policing there. You can then check it again, see if there is any change, etc. I mean, I'm just showing you examples, but you can get an idea. People, we asked them about specifically about the queue at the entrance to the compound, so you can get qualitative answers about, from it. You can ask people to take pictures. So you take pictures and you and you can write a comment. Okay. I have to say we did also the same in Nottingham with the sheriff of Nottingham, but don't worry, we told him we're not helping you to find Robin Hood. But you see a drunk girl, so again you can, interesting for research, but maybe more interesting just to drag her into the compound of the drunk students, and thank God in Israel we can drink from 18 and not from 21. So our students can, no, our students, we don't have students usually that is 21 because they're in the army. But anyway, and here is from a PhD of my student. You can actually ask people how they feel and see, you know, along the day. So when do they feel safe or when do they feel happy, etc. But you can also create maps of like the map happiness in Pittsburgh, where people are happy, where they're not happy, where people feel comfort or not. This is in Jerusalem, but you can do all kinds of analysis like that because you're starting to get information in real time about what people are feeling. And if we will attach sensors, then it could be, you know, what is your subjective feeling and what does your body tell us about, you know, what is the air pollution doing to you or not, or the weather, etc. And I don't believe, Rich, but I'm going to finish on time.
Okay.
It's a miracle. So the smartphones, it's easy to disseminate surveys, okay, because we have the technology. We don't need to buy hardware like we did in the past because we can actually use people's own phones, which is much better because then they will actually take it with them. We might need to give them some incentive, it would be very good, but if they actually, we measure and we see that they participate, in that sense it's good. And the person can download the application by themselves, we send them link, we help them to set it up, but then we don't need actually to go to the places and they can move all over the US, we can still track them, or China, or whatever. It can reduce survey costs, but in reality, now when we are in the beginning, it takes a lot of money to make everything. But we have, we reduce some of the recall bias using this technology, and people take the phones usually everywhere. I see people in the gym. Not that I'm going often, as I should, but you know, people even texting on the machine when they fall down and sue the gym. Not everybody owns yet a smartphone. Okay, older adults, especially lower socioeconomic status, developing countries. But I know that in some surveys of my colleague Mei Kwan, now she's at the University of Illinois, she gives them phones for 3 years with a plan. So they are happy, they got a smartphone for free, they got a plan for free, and then, you know, so you can overcome this as well if you work with some groups. Short battery of life, usually if you put the GPS on, it can take your battery. But in our application, we design it in such a way that you can use it for the whole day without your battery. It's many measures to use as low electricity as possible, because we developed it initially for this project, but now we are started a big survey with the Israeli Ministry of Transportation. One of the demands was that we hold the whole day. So there is many things in your GPS in the phone that is using this, using a lot of, because if it doesn't get, let's say, 25 feet accuracy, the GPS gets crazy and just try to get the location and use a lot of electricity. So we said, listen, if it's 50 meters or 150 feet, let it go, it's good enough. So you do all kinds of programming for the GPS to use less electricity. GPS is not as good with smartphones as with loggers, but again, if you don't want to measure, you know, if it's all your surveys about walking, let's say, maybe a smartphone is not a good thing. If you gait. so don't use GPS because it will not help you. But I mean, if you are interested like in very specific things, it is problematic. And the problem is all the time to upgrade. You know, the changing the operation systems, upgrading them, you need to do it as well. So this costs you money. How do you draft people and get a representative sample? It's not only a question of GPS and smartphones, it's a question of any server, but of course here it's a question, and we're depending on participant, unfortunately. But you know, they can turn off the GPS, they cannot, don't have Wi-Fi, they can forget the phone, but this is true to every survey, and you're finished.
Is your software available for people to use?
Yes.
It's an app, an application?
Yeah, the application is out there in the market, but you need to get from us authorization. And yes, we have this in the Netherlands, we have this in Denmark, people are using this in different, in Spain. Not really to full-scale studies, but people are playing with them, trying to see what they can do. So yes, if somebody is interested.
And when you refer to your system, is that the sensometer?
Yes.
Of the 2.0 and 3.0?
Yeah.
Really interesting. Two questions. One is, in the example you gave with some of the tourists, like they get off the boat in Palermo or on Birdfriend or something, do they have to turn anything on or agree? Or
no,
you know, they're going through, going through Bangoria, and you go through the section. It just knows that you're in the crowd and getting off the plane.
In that case, we don't use smartphones.
Uh-huh.
We use GPS devices.
So you have to hand them.
We hand them to people. So in Birthright, the group itself have a smartphone that is tracking the group because of security reasons. So the parents that are sending the kids, they tell them, don't worry, we track the group all the time, there's a problem, we can send a helicopter. We discovered in our study that many of the groups don't put it on anyway. But
yeah, that's the other question too, related, like I know when I go overseas, I get a huge roaming bill.
Yeah.
From the cell phone carrier, so I'll always turn off the GPS or the network. Wi-Fi.
Yeah, so in all the research that you saw, it was with GPS devices, so we give them a device. But I can assure you that roaming, international roaming, will be in 2, 3, 4 years. You will have an international plan as well, because like now you have a free plan, you start to have a free plan for roaming. So I don't think this will be a problem for the future. But yes, you're right. So now in the survey, they're giving them smartphones in Ben Gurion Airport. They offer them to participate in the survey and give them smartphones, and the incentive is free roaming and internet and calls in Israel. So this is like the incentive for the Ministry of Transportation. They're giving them a phone that they can do all. They can actually phone to 42 countries for free, and they have roaming for free in Israel. So this is the idea with the smartphone. Yes, but you're right. I mean, if you... Many tourists are not using the smartphones.
And for the Palermo people who have
they got a GPS device?
Yes.
They got a device, but there it was easy.
Right.
Because you have one point of this, they disembark from one point and they return to the ship. Most of the people return to the ship. Some are being left in concrete foundation in a beautiful village called Corleone, which is not far from Palermo, now I'm joking, but you know, people tend to go back to the cruise ship, so we just wait for them and take the device. So it was like, you know, people from Palermo asked me, do you want to do a service? I said, oh yeah, of course, you know, but so of course, there are limitations, but if you do a survey not with tourists, it's much easier. If you have here people, you know, just because you introduce yourself as nursing, but you know, if you have a hospital and somebody is coming to get some kind of treatment, and then you can get, you know, take the device, give it back to me, and when you get back to the doctor in 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever, and then you try to see what's going on there. And usually what we found, for example, in the spine survey, is people are excited, you know, to participate because they feel, which is not true, but this is what they feel. We didn't tell them that, but they felt that the doctor is following them and following their recovery. Okay, so they was, and then it was really bad for research, and so our paper was like demonstration of the, but they were changing the whole behavior because they were walking, you know, the, when you have a spine operation, the doctor tells you you need to walk. So they were actually walking because they knew, or they were thinking that the doctor will actually look at what they're doing.
Right, Eisenberg.
Yeah, so in one sense it's very good because it can help your recovery, because if you're going to, you know, spine surgery, if everything is fine and you're released after a day or two, I don't know, maybe here they release you the same day to save some money, but let's say after the, when they release you, you know, normally after a spine surgery you don't spend a lot of time. You go out, the doctor, if everything is fine, will see you after 3 weeks or 4 weeks. But what are you doing in the meantime? It could be also good for the doctor. So in that sense, yes, there is a big limitation, as you said, you know, with roaming. I'm trying to sell you that it's really great. Yes, it's really great, but it's like in any research, any research design, you have a lot of things you have to take in account. If not, everything will be screwed up.
Right.
So you need to think about it. You need to do the pilot test. You need to see if it's working or not. But I'm just saying it gives you another, what I try to show, it gives you an additional kind of aspect to things we're doing already. Yeah. I think somebody wanted to ask, but you already had to go, so this is a way to, yeah.
I'm picking up the data with Jerusalem and the men and women crossing them.
Yeah.
Do you have any longitudinal data? Like where there's change over time and patterns, and you know which actor might be leading that, those changes?
No, because this was done in at one point, so
it is a lot of data even for one day.
Yeah, so it just reflects, it was collected during a period of a year, but each person was tracked for a day, so we don't have we do have I have a PhD student that we published a paper in Cities together about it, that she let them draw a mental map of the city, and then we tracked them, and then she wanted to see why, if there is a, you know, if there is a relation between the actual behavior and the mental map. And here you have a longitudinal, here it was done in two times, but no, I don't have any of this data on Jerusalem. But I think it's very interesting. The most interesting thing is to do like at one T1 and then to see how things change or don't change, and then to measure again. But sometimes you don't have the funding, the ability, you know.
Yeah,
but this, I agree with you, this could be really, especially it's interesting in Jerusalem because this was done before the light rail started to function in the city. So today we have a new light rail, so it would be very interesting to see what is happening as a result of the light rail.
While you're here, are there any connections or is there anything that you would need help with your research?
Again?
Connections or relationships with people here during your stay?
I'd be very glad if we can do something. So.
Oh yeah, no, I mean if there are like types of people you want to learn about or types of research that you'd like to do while you're here?
People with huge grants. they don't know what to do with their
and
grant money.
How long
money.
Are you here for?
I'm here for the year.
Just the beginning of the year?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I'll be happy, you know, I have, of course, my own teaching and backlog, but I'm very happy to do some research with people here. So I was talking already with some of the people. Some people are sitting here, some people couldn't be here today, but I'm open, you know, we need to find a good questions, we need to think about, I prefer to do something with smartphones, because this is really, in my opinion, the kind of the more advancing, so yeah, I'm very happy to collaborate. I cannot collaborate, you know, too many stuff, but in general, yes, I don't have any specific you should, you know, talk, see if there's a, you know, like speed dating. No, I'm joking. Okay. But I'm sitting here, so if everybody, you know, next week or the week after, we can talk. And my, this is my contact details. You can send to either of the, Eric made the first mail, goes to the second mail. So,
oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.